what Lichtenstein was explaining, just as perhaps only a son can, how painful it was to witness this degeneration of his father, and how painful it was for his father, and he described specifically, I remember vividly, Yom Nerayim davening, and Mila B'Mila, saying the words that his father could repeat it, saying the words that his father could repeat it. And it's always been a very sharp image in my mind of something that, you know, Pokeh Ivrim, which we don't always appreciate and really take for granted, and how powerful a keli it is to have a vision. And at the same time, already, if I could have a chumash. That's right. Yeah, that would be perfect. Thank you. The first recorded example of somebody losing their sight in history comes from our parsha. In parsha Toldos, in parsha Chazayin, an introduction to the really not only the climactic story of this parsha, but you'd have to say probably one of the top five stories in all of the Torah is the whole for the drama and for the tension and even perhaps the controversy. It is a story, of course, of Yitzchak and Yaakov and Esav and the Brachos, the Bechora. And the Torah tells us, at the beginning of Parashat Zayin, Vayihi ki zaken Yitzchak, hichahetna, einav, meros, that his eyes started to weaken dim from seeing, because Esav v'no agadol, v'yomrei lov, v'ni v'yomrei lov, v'neini. And the Torah goes out of its way to tell us that Yitzchak was losing his sight. Now, since we're familiar with the story, we know that from the story's the narrative perspective, we know why that's relevant later on, because obviously the whole Rus with Yaakov would never have even been shayach had Yitzchak had good vision. It's interesting, just I wanted to just mention before we get into some of the halachos, that there are four or five different explanations that are suggested by the Mefarshim as to why and from where Yitzchak's blindness came from. The Rashi actually, Rashi quotes three of the explanations. The first one comes from the Tanhuma, which says the eighth of the wives had a avodah zarah, and incense, and the smoke caused the blindness, and obviously there's l'cha'ora, something very significant and symbolic about that as well. The second reason that Rashi quotes from a Medrash Rabbah, that during, also very vivid imagery, that during the Akedah, Yitzchak looks up, and the angels were crying in Shemayim, and the tears dropped right in his eyes, and that ultimately impacted his vision. And finally, again, coming from the Tanhuma, the Medrash tells us that, in fact, on the contrary, it was very unnatural, but Dafka now, Hashem, there was no degenerative disease, there was anything like that. Hashem went out of his way through Hashkacha Pratis to make Yitzchak lose his vision, so that could set the stage for the whole process of Yaakov ultimately getting the Bechorah. Those three are all mentioned in Rashi. If you look at the Sforno, he actually has a very, he says it's a punishment. It's a punishment. It's a punishment because he didn't restrain properly Yitzchak's bad behavior. You know, it's one of the great mysteries, Yitzchak's real love that he had for Esav, and some Mefarshim are Darshan Meshvach, in some way or another, in terms of the love of a father and what he saw in him, whatever, certain potential and other things. And the Sforno says, no, he blew it. He made a mistake. And he's punished for it, and the punishment is in the context of him losing his vision. The Gemara Megillah Daf Chaf Ches Amud Aleph also says that it was a punishment. And here says, it's in the context there, which he's not supposed to look at Rishayim. And says, you see from this is the proof text, because it says that Yitzchak looked at Esav, and is looking at Esav in the face, that's what created the punishment. A very 13 Dafim earlier, also in Gemara Megillah Daf Chaf Vav, he wants to very interestingly, that it was in this case genetic, it was genetic punishment, so to speak. Namely, that we know that Mefarshim were not always thrilled with Avraham and Sarah's behavior towards Avimelech. Avimelech was certainly upset, and when they're leaving, Avimelech is upset and he, so to speak, curses Sarah. And the Gemara darshan there on Daf Tet Vav that curse was carried through into their son Yitzchak. That Yitzchak lost his vision because of that. And finally, to round out the entire picture, perhaps the most simple Balabatish explanation, the Ramban says, it was old age. Right. Absolutely. That's exactly what the Ramban says. He got old. Right? Like the Lichtenstein's father, like countless other examples. He got old. When he was older, old age took its toll. If you look then, two psukim later, in Pasuk Gimel, there's a very significant and very fascinating Rashi. Because the truth is that for the Pesukim Aleph through Daled, we just read the introduction, but then Yitzchak is very specific in his introductions to, and his directions and instructions to Esav. Yomar hi na zakanti v'yadati v'yomosi, v'ata sona, keilecha, telyecha, v'kashtecha, get all your weapons together, v'tzei asada, v'tzudalit, sayed, or tzeda, however you want to read it, you know, go and do it for me, v'asa li, tamim, kashir havdi, v'ivili, achil, v'avur, v'achan avshi, v'teramamus. And Rashi then on Pasuk Gimel quotes two important things. Number one, Rashi says that, well, let's work in backwards, and Rashi says that one of the things that the details were coming to convey was that Yitzchak was going out of his way to tell Esav not to bring him anything stolen. It has to be properly from his animals, or Hefker, whatever you want to call it. But he shouldn't steal anybody's animals. And most interestingly, as Yitzchak needs to give directions to Esav on how to hunt this weapon and that weapon, so Rashi says he was coming to tell him to make sure that he killed the animal kahalacha, that the animal shouldn't be in the vela. So another mafarshim, and I put down on the sheet, most notably the Kli Chemda. The Kli Chemda was a Meir Don Plotsky. I believe he had an affiliation with Ger Chassidus. He lived towards the beginning of the turn of the 20th century. Fascinating person. He actually had Tzionisha leanings. The big, big gone. If I'm not mistaken, I think he was a Ger Chassid. And he has the Sefer Kli Chemda, which is on Chumash. There's other Sfarim, which are in the Rambam Sefer Mitzvahs, and others which I have, which are also very beautiful Sfarim. And he has halachic lamdasha discussions, I'll say, to the Parshios. So the Kli Chemda and others ask the question, what's going on here with this Rashi? We know that Esav, one thing he had going for him was that he's very makar on kibbut as aim. Does anyone have a havamina that Esav would bring his father Yitzchak tray food? Yitzchak had to felt the need to tell him, make sure to bring me kosher food. Make sure not to bring me something stolen. That Yitzchak, the Esav would eat treif, okay. The Esav would steal, also okay. But then he would bring it to Yitzchak. How could it be, says the Kli Chemda? So one of the answers given, which sets the stage for our halachic discussion, is that Esav had a shita. Yitzchak was aware of the shita. Maybe even Yitzchak held this way. Perhaps. Namely, that Esav held that Yitzchak's blind now. And if he's blind, he's putter for mitzvos. And therefore, there's nothing wrong with him eating tray food. And therefore, Yitzchak was saying, even so, let's nimmi sure it's a din, I don't want to have anything trace. His eyes up in the Mepharshim. Very fascinating concept. So, of course, this really begs the question, is it true? Is it true that a sum is pater for mitzvahs? And even if a sum is pater mitzvahs, does that mean to such an extent, so literally, so dramatically, that a blind person can eat on kosher food? It's hard to believe. So what's going on? So let's see where this comes from. So the most famous source for this, and I'm now moving into Roman Os Bet here on the sheet, is the Gemara and Baba Kama. There's half of the Gemara and Baba Kama is also repeated in Gemara and Kiddushin. And the Gemara here, some of the first sheet here. The Gemara and Baba Kama starts off with a Mishnah, very Baba Kama-ish. Doesn't look like you get anything exciting, nothing to do with blind. Namely, that one of, we know the damages that you can do to a person is boshas, right? You hurt somebody in such a way that they have embarrassment. That is material damages according to halakha. That can be collected. So the Mishnah tells us that if you somehow do something embarrassing and injure to a blind person, the Mishnah says that you're chayiv in this damages to the blind person. Right? The Mishnah just says straightforward. The Mishnah lists also different categories of people. So the Gemara there in Baba Kama, Daf Pei Zayin, again going through Daf Pei Ches, says, starts off, this Mishnah is lo aliba to Rabbi Yehuda. Because Rabbi Yehuda holds, that in fact, if you damage if you somehow hurt a suma, there in fact is no obligation of boshes, of embarrassment. And then, again, I'm very briefly summarizing, but the Gemara through half an Amud, so to speak, has all sorts of drushos back and forth in which it's constantly making another expanding and further expanding and expanding Rabbi Yehuda's, so to speak, and I use this in quotes, discrimination, if you will, against the Summa. But in this case, if you will, maybe it's to the advantage, that he's not obligated in this, he's not obligated in this, he's not included in that, he's not included in that. And it keeps on going, and then it points out that others disagree with Rabbi Yehuda, but the Gemara has the development of Rabbi Yehuda's opinion in the larger context, again, it's tying in to this boshes, this embarrassment damages idea, but then it broadens the discussion.
Was it from halacha, or if
Yes. No, he darshens the pasuk. He darshens the pasuk. A number of different pasukim you see there. And then the Gemara reaches, so to speak, a climax where the Gemara says that first it the preceding drasha is that all these mishpatim type things, right? This idea of boshet, all this civil law. So this idea of damages is not included in. Rabbi Yehuda says if a blind person kills another person accidentally, he doesn't have to go to galus. Another idea of a mishpat. So then he's broadened this idea that all civil law doesn't apply to the blind person. And then Rabbi Yehuda has one final drasha where he says that the mishpatim, the civil law, is connected to the ritual, the religious law, the mitzvos, and since they're pater in mishpatim, the summa, he's even exempt from the mitzvos, as the lashon of the Gemara says, that Rabbi Yehuda is potra mikol mitzvah shevetorah. Rabbi Yehuda exempts a blind person from all mitzvah obligations. That's the literal translation of the Gemara's words.
No.
That's what the Gemara says. Patra mikol mitzvah shevetorah. Right? If you leave early, you'll be very misled. So that's why, don't leave early. But that's what the Gemara says. That's all, nothing more, nothing less. Then the Gemara goes into a discussion about Rabbi Yosef. And we know from other Gemaras, Rabbi Yosef was a somewhat tragic figure, a la, again, what we all know, unfortunately, many people that we know. When he got sick, he got older, and he went blind. He wasn't born blind, Rabbi Yosef, if I'm not mistaken. He was not born blind, but he went blind at some point in his life. And the Gemara here mentions Rabbi Yosef, and it's this part of the Gemara, which is perhaps more well-known, and it's that it's parallel. This Gemara, this part of the Gemara is in Kiddushin as well. Rabbi Yosef, again, we're eating food, we're thinking about children, we're in a shul, it's perfect, because Rabbi Yosef talks about throwing a kiddush. So the Gemara says, Rabbi Yosef wants to throw a kiddush for the rabbis. Which rabbis? He says, if you'll tell me that the halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda. Because then it's clear from the whole context of the Gemara, and from that original Mishnah, where, according to the opinion of the Mishnah, you are chayav in damages of boshet for suma. Rabbi Yehuda argues. And back and forth, the whole broad discussion, there seems to be some anonymous or a Tanakama and Rabbi Yehuda. And says Rabbi Yosef, if he's apparently not sure who the halacha should be like, Rabbi Yosef says, again, he's speaking as a blind person, he says, I want to throw a kiddush for the rabbis, right, this, if they'll tell me that the halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda. Why? Because that would mean that I am technically exempt from all the mitzvot. Yes, I am nevertheless fulfilling the mitzvot, and of course, to do something beyond what you're obligated to, I must be getting such tremendous reward for that, so I'm going to throw a kiddush for the rabbis if that's the halakha. But then he says, I learned something which crushed me. And this is the context there in the Gemara Kiddushin, that counterintuitively, this would be a topic for another shiur, I don't want to get into the rationale behind it, but we have a concept in halakha that in fact is just the opposite. There's more reward for doing a mitzvah you're obligated in than someone who volunteers to do something that they weren't obligated in. So then, Rabbi Yosef is in trouble, but he's quick on his feet, and he says, well, I'll just switch my plans. I'll throw a kiddush if the Rabbanim will tell me that the halacha is not like Rabbi Yehuda. That's the end of the Gemara in Baba Kama, again with the parallel in the Gemara in Kiddushin. So one thing we see for sure, that there seems to be a debate, already go back to Tanaim, are blind people with a summa, pater, exempt from mitzvos or not? And none other than the great Rabbi Yosef apparently wasn't even sure himself. In other words, there's no definitive psak in the Mishnah per se or the Gemara. Although I guess again you could say, since the Mishnah only quoted the opinion that you are chayiv in damages of embarrassment to a blind person, if you assume that it's all interconnected, perhaps that Mishnah is a proof a little bit against Rabbi Yehuda, but simply the Gemara per se in the discussion of Rabbi Yosef, as interesting as it is, seems to leave open the possibility, and therefore, even though it's not an equal fight, as we'll see in a moment, but we shouldn't be therefore surprised that there is in fact a debate in the Rishonim. And this is the first thing that we really need to discuss, which is, who's right? Bottom line, what is the halacha? So actually, you know, let's we'll go in that direction. We could have gone in the other direction, but we'll go in this order since that's the way I put it on the sheet anyway. So who's right? How do we paskin? So, now I'm on Oz Gimel. The Ran on the Gemara in Kiddushin, and the Rosh in Tshuva, and the Radbaz in Tshuva, and many others, all say that we paskin not like Rabbi Yehuda. It's a very provocative idea. It's in the Gemara. He's famous, the sheet of Rabbi Yehuda, that a blind person is exempt, but it's all academic. We don't pass in that way. A blind person is obligated on a Torah level in all mitzvahs, just like anybody else.
Okay.
Who disagrees? So not that many, but at least in the Rishonim, the Beis Yosef, this is the one context which we hope to get, I hope to get to the end of this year, when it comes to giving an aliyah, the question of giving an aliyah to a blind person. So it's in that context that the Beis Yosef, that's obviously Rabbi Yosef Karo in his commentary on the tour, so Rabbi Yosef quotes a Rabbeinu Yerucham. Rabbeinu Yerucham seems to say very straightforward, and I gave you the primary mokum. Rabbeinu Yerucham is not such a well-known Rishon, and for those who are familiar with it, he divides up his sefer in somewhat unique ways. So well, this is in the section of Toldos Adam Chava, whatever, you look it up, it's interesting just to get a piece, to get a little sense of how that sefer works. So the Rabbeinu Yerucham, but again, if you're not so exotic or brave, you can just look at the Beis Yosef. So Joseph quotes the Rabbeinu Yerucham, the apostles like Rabbi Yehuda, and he does not qualify it, getting to your question. Simple understanding of Rabbeinu Yerucham is that he passes like Rabbi Yehuda, and he understands Rabbi Yehuda to be very literally and very absolutely. Namely, a blind person is exempt, period, across the board. So when we look towards the Shulchan Aruch, or the more recent poskim, so we see that this seems to be pretty much followed. Namely, this seems to be the consensus is to reject him. The Magen Avram, again, we'll make reference to this more specifically at the end of this year, but also in Siman Nun Gimel, relating to the Kriyas HaTorah, the Aliyah issue. The Magen Avram says we passed against Rabbi Yehuda. Yeshua Yaakov then says, but aren't there some people who do pass like him? Yeah, maybe the issue is Yaakov is worried about that, but it seems to me the Magen Avraham is not, because the preponderance of weight of authority of Rishonim seems to be against Rabbi Yehuda. And therefore, that's why the Mishnah Berurah also assumes that we're chayv. This is in two different places. And just to give you something that I came across today, which I certainly wouldn't have thought of otherwise, and it's an interesting marmakum if you're curious, the Sefer Nachal Esan. The Sefer Nachal Esan is written by anyone familiar with the Sefer? Contemporary. The author's still living. I'll give you a hint. So Chaim, can you ask me? Chaim, can you ask? Huh? Right, put it on the sheet. Okay, I'm an easy teacher. Okay, so anyone know what the paper's about? Very good, Shraga. Don't be so embarrassed. It's about Egel Arufa. It's all on the sheet. But we used to have a thing. I'm sure, like in all schools in YU, very often some teachers would give the same test every year and let the kids keep home the tests. So this is what's known as Misora. So somebody asked if Aaron Soloveitchik Zatzal, if that was unethical. He said, the teacher is unethical. He says, but if for doing such an incompetent job. He says, but if the teachers give it with permission, then he said there was nothing wrong. So if you put it down, so I put it on the sheet, so that wouldn't be, right. Everyone can breathe now, including myself, and we can move on. So Chaim Kinyevsky, in this paper, it's all about Egla Rufa. Egla Rufa is a very interesting halacha, which is, you know, if a person is killed and we don't know who he is and what happened, the circumstances in between two cities, and we find the elders of the city that he's closest to, and they have to go through a whole ritual, basically to somehow resolve the guilt that somehow they should have because they didn't make sure that this traveler had safe passage. So the question is, what happens if the person that we find dead, this John Doe, as we might call him, is blind? I guess maybe he has like a braille card or something. We figure out that he's blind. Right, you can't figure out somebody's blind after being dead. Okay? I just thought of that. But anyway. I mean, somehow they figured out somehow he's dead. So Rukhan Kievsky quotes, he says, on his own, he says, there's still going to be an Egla Rufa on a blind person. Why? So if he looks in the notes on the bottom, he says, because we passed in against Rabbi Yehuda. Because a blind person is Chayiv in all mitzvot. And therefore, he's Chayiv in all mitzvot. He's a full status of a Jew. But then he says, but what about according to Rabbeinu Yerucham? He's not sure. Not sure. So, again, if Egla Rufa becomes a Maitza, we'll clarify a little bit more. But just to give you another kind of off of the derech, kind of a mucker for this idea that we seem to, as a whole, seem to reject the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda. Yes?
But that's our correct.
Correct. But the question, let me ask you a question. If, again, for example, you find a non-Jew dead in between the city, right on the road, is there Egla Rufa? Right. So the question, on some level, the status of the victim is relevant.
Well, we
see he gets both. So it's all connected. And economy. So that's what Rabbi Chaim Kinyevsky is saying. It's all connected.
It's not the child that wasn't
afraid
of the mitzvah.
Say again?
It's not the child that wasn't afraid of the mitzvah.
Correct, but a child is still has, in general, we know that that's why with chinuch and the fact that they're atzili dechiyuv, they have a concept sometimes in halacha, right? That's why sometimes you see a difference, even a strength and a cut, and sometimes have over an isha. Even though an isha is mature, she's an adult, and on that level it's better than a child. On the other hand, the isha is always going to be an isha. She's always going to be exempt from some mitzvos, whereas the cotton will eventually grow into a zed. Listen, the truth is, you know, we could do a garufa when it comes up in Chumash. That'll be the week we'll do more details on a garufa. But as I say, just as a reference, it seems to be that that is the going assumption. No, actually, I think they go, all the Mukharas that I saw go out of their way to say, even if not.
Perhaps, right. In terms of if you
want
to bring in like the ability to learn.
Right. So I'll give you another story. I once heard from a Rebbe, you know, the whole derech and limud of lumdus is a very independent derech. And the focus is very much on thinking, critical thinking, suggesting svaras. So I heard some Rebbeim, they were talking about the fact that, you know, that, you know, in the wrong hands, it's dangerous. If this Talmud is not mature enough and doesn't have enough experience in learning, who knows what they'll come up with? They'll think it's a nice Gemara. They don't have enough knowledge base to know the guidelines. So as a classic example, the Rebbe mentioned, there's a halakha, which I'm not going to mention today, but it happens to relate to this, which is a summa shenis rape. Right? Let's say he's blind from birth or not. And there's cataract surgery, whatever the case may be. There's all sorts of miraculous things they're doing nowadays. And then he's healed. He's not blind anymore. So he's... It says the Talmud was clearing maybe as a din summa. Okay? So I don't think we say that, and either, you know, again, just Alpi Lamdus, maybe you'll say that, but you need Alpi Seichel too. You need Alpi Seichel too. I think that's the general consensus. I don't think he says anything that distinguishes him, makes him unique in this general figure. Now, the biggest section here I have of Makoros, which comes from Os Dalet here, is the most famous raid about Summa. A lot of discussion, classical discussion about Summa. What's fascinating, and this is why I almost thought it would have been better to tell you this first, is that it's almost all Shaloh Aliva de Hilchasa. In other words, there's a huge amount of discussion to analyze, and this was really your question before, I was just waiting to get to it now, which is, what does Rabbi Yehuda really mean? Whether we paskim like him or not, what is Rabbi Yehuda really saying? Is he really saying, as it seems like in the Gemara, that the Summa is completely exempt from all mitzvot? So the truth is that even though some deny even this, it appears that at least Rabbeinu Yerucham understands that. Now the Prima Gadim, who we're going to get to in terms of his own personal opinion, but the Prima Gadim denies that even Rabbeinu Yerucham understood that way. And he ties Rabbeinu Yerucham back into his own Shita. But the simple understanding of the Prima Gadim of the Rabbeinu Yerucham, which is the simple understanding of the Gemara, is that he's exempt, and exempt means across the board, and absolutely. But as I say, there really is many, many who take issue with this, and most notably, right on the daf, is Tosfos. I mentioned, you see here, I gave three different Tosfos, and I think there might have been a fourth in Rosh Hashanah. I could have put it right down, one in Rosh Hashanah down. I didn't. I think there's even one in Rosh Hashanah. Tosfos in many places... This is a Shach type of idea in Tosfos. Tosfos in many places says that even according to Yehuda, you can't take things so literally or so absolutely. Rather, what Tosfos says is that even according to Yehuda, in all mitzvos, positive and negative, ase and los ase, the blind person is obligated mita rabbanon. In other words, there's two extremes. He understands that Rabbi Yehuda exempts the mita raisa from everything. The Torah paters him and exempts him from everything. But come along the rabbis and say, no, he's obligated in everything on a rabbinic level. Why would the rabbi, you know, couldn't leave well enough alone? Why did they intrude? The Tosfos suggests, because if you had this guy, he's born Jewish, raised in a Jewish, even observant home, and he is exempt from everything, nearest lo kanachri. He looked like a non-Jew. What kind of life is that? What kind of appearance is that? What kind of lifestyle is that? How could it be? And again, this is now not the time, but parenthetically, I mean, we really believe Ratzel Azakos at Yisrael. This is what life is all about. You get to tell the guy, hey, no business. Who knows what'll be? He'll be off the prayer. He'll be off. Near close enough. The Tosfos says this in the slightly, we're going to see in a second, but the note of Yehuda has certain diukim and slight different lashonos in the parallel Tosfos. But fundamentally, that's what the Tosfos says. Tosfos says he's chayav min rabbanan because we want him to live a Jewish lifestyle. If the Torah exempted him, we're going to come in and make sure that he lives He lived this lifestyle.
That should be an optimum in terms of being mostly somebody who's high up their eyes.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Why not? The Kedushin Tovshin? I think so. Whether he's obligated in the mitzvah of Kedushin, according to the Rambam, who says it's such a mitzvah, that is probably dependent on this whole discussion. But even if you assume that he's putter from the mitzvah of getting married, but he's mutter lava lakol, that's for sure. The Note of Yehuda, as I just mentioned, the Note of Yehuda here, this is in the Madura Tinyana, so he suggests certain nuances within different Tosafin, but ultimately he resolves it. And another interesting idea, again, within the Tosafos I have here, the Shulis, the Minchas Aluzer. You know what the Minchas Aluzer is?
A loser,
right? He's a loser. The Munkacher. So he has an interesting suffix, which I don't think he resolves, which is that when we say that according to Tosafos they're obligated in everything Yidur Rabbanon, is that limited to Mitzvah Daraisa? Meaning, did Tosafos say, we go look at all the 613 Mitzvah Daraisa and say, Yidur Rabbanon, the Summa, the blind person, is obligated? Or do we even further say that even on the Mitzvah Darabbanon, Chanukah, the whole institution, is only rabbinic? So do you say, Trei Darabbanon, would you say that the Kamalon Chazal and obligated rabbinically in the rabbinic mitzvah of Chanukah? He's not sure. But he raises that suffix within Tosafos' understanding of Rabbi Yehuda. Comes along the Rashba on that Gemara in Baba Kama, and he quotes Tosafos and says, no way, nothing doing. We may not hold like Rabbi Yehuda, but the bottom line is if you want to be like Rabbi Yehuda, you got to be honest about it. Rabbi Yehuda, again, as I mentioned, from Rabbeinu Yerucham. Rabbeinu Yerucham paskens like this. Rashba doesn't play paskens, but Rashba says Rabbeinu Yerucham meant nothing. He's totally exempt. There is no obligation. Hinting a little bit, at least, at the rationale of Tosafos, he says, at most, you'll say it's a midas chassidus. It's a good thing. No one's going to stop the blind person from shaking the lulav, let's say, or lighting Shabbos candles, or whatever the case may be. But it's no obligation whatsoever on any level, rabbinic, daraisa, nothing. He's totally exempt according to Rabbi Yehuda. That's all fundamentally one position, the Tosafos' position. Do we say that there's a rabbinic obligation on the Summa across the board? Second basic position, again, which tries to nuance and massage, if you will, a little bit, the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda, is the Prima Gadim. And this is the Prima Gadim. Prima Gadim wrote, aside from his commentary on the Nosei Kelim on Shulchan Aruch, he also wrote the very famous introductions. He wrote introductions to different sections of Shulchan Aruch, and on his entire commentary, he wrote a very famous and lengthy Psicha Kolelis, which means what we call in English, general introduction. Now, recently, somebody, if you look at, if you take a Shulchan Aruch off the shelf, it's huge and teeny little Rashi script, and you could break your eyes reading it. Very, just aesthetically, the way the layout, the pagination is an almost, is a burden. You can go blind. Very good. About that, Norm. Right? And the fact that it's complicated stuff to begin with. So recently, somebody published an independent volume of Psicha Kolelis. I don't own it yet. Got to get that. But there is a Psicha Kolelis. I may even have footnotes even. But at the very least is you can read it. So that's a great, great Milo. So in that general introduction in his, in Chela Gimel of the Psicha Kolelis, Prima Gadim has a discussion. He gets into the issue of Summa. And the Prima Gadim says that even according to Rabbi Yehuda, you were thinking of the Prima Gadim. You.
I wasn't.
Okay. Well, what you heard or what you had in mind comes from Rabbi Yehuda, namely, Prima Gadim says that true, on a Daraisa level, the blind person is exempt from all positive mitzvahs. Doesn't have shake lulav, doesn't have to light candles, or whatever the case may be. But he was always included, even on a Daraisa level, on the Torah level, in all negative commandments, and all mitzvot asay. So, for example, says the Kli Chemda, getting back to Yitzchak and Esav in our story, it's a little bit difficult. Why, even if you think that Yitzchak is blind, and therefore Yitzchak becomes putter of mitzvot like Rabbi Yehuda, it would never allow him to eat trace. That's what the Prima Gadim says. The Prima Gadim says that even according to Rabbi Yehuda, a blind person is still prohibited in all mitzvot lo sasei. He asks on himself, as the Note of Yehuda and others ask on him. But he asks on himself. If you're really sharp, you know the questions that other people can ask on you. So he asks on himself, but Tosafos' idea, and again, in the pecking order, obviously, Tosafos is going to have more authority. Tosafos' idea that we need to come in and give him this rabbinic level obligation, because without that, Nirislo Kanukri, he'll have a lifestyle of a non-Jew. That sounds like that before the Rabbanan came in, that Yehuda was really exempting him from everything. If the Prima Gadim was right, and even if Yehuda obligated him as his losase, that's not a non-Jewish lifestyle. Why is Tosfos so worried? That's a question that some use against him completely. And he raises on himself, and he tries to get out of it, and he says appearances are really everything. Namely, it's nearest low kanukri. We're worried about how the guy is going to look. And if he's only obligated in the mitzvah of lo saseh, which is what the Prima Gadim himself thinks, so how do you fulfill a mitzvah of lo saseh? Passively, b'shev v'al taseh, you don't eat treif. So because I never eat a cheeseburger, that doesn't give me the appearance. Maybe I just don't like cheeseburgers. So I still have the appearance, there's no overt demonstration of living a Jewish lifestyle just because I avoid wearing chutneys in my suit and kosher, non-kosher in my diet. So therefore, that's why, even according to Tosfos, they added the mitzvahs asei on a derabbanan level. But don't think that the Prima Gadim did that totally. That totally contradicts this idea. Rabbi Kiv Eger has a tshuva, where he also suggests a proof that even according to Rabbi Yehuda, they are obligated in mitzvos lo saseh. Again, he takes the Prima Gadim approach. He has a proof when it comes to brachos, because what did Tosfos say? That not only can they make brachos, Tosfos mentions, and that they're obligated mid rabbanon. And he mentions the Rabbi Kiv Eger, a famous gemara of the Shabbos and Daf Gimel. It says, right, Hanukkah's coming up. It's a rabbinic mitzvah. So how do we make the bracha to Hashem? Hashem says, oh, bitzivanu. We're saying Hashem's name, that Hashem commanded us. Hashem didn't command us. The rabbis in the time of Hanukkah commanded us. So we have to light Hanukkah candles. So the Gemara answers, because it's mechlal lo sasur. There's a pasuk in the Torah that says, listen to the rabbis of every generation. So if you have to listen to the rabbis, so, and again, this, maybe one day we will do this as a step of chamura. There's a famous machlokus in the Shrashim, in the Rambam, and the Ramban. But it sounds like, according to this, and this is in fact the accusations that the Ramban levies very heavily against the Rambam, that you're caught yourself, you're in a twisted mess which you can never get out of, namely that every rabbinic mitzvah is really daraisa because of lo sasur, which is absurd. But it sounds like what the Rambam's saying, that's like the lengthy Ramban attacking him, much literature to defend the Rambam, that's not for tonight. But if that's the case, so Rabbi Akiva Eger says, you see, if we're allowing the Summa to make brachas, Balkarcha, the Summa must have been obligated to meet Araisa and Los Aseis, including Los Osir, which is what gives them legitimacy to make the bracha. It's a little bit, you have to take a few steps, you got to be sharp to follow it, but or not so exhausted, but that's so it is that the Rabbi Kiva Eger tries to defend this idea. In the further Tshuvas, Rabbi Kiva Eger has more, and you see here I have this the Tshuva again from the Rabbi Yehuda, where he also tries to develop this idea of the Prima Gadim, bringing proofs, asking questions, a lengthy discussion, again, all revolving around this distinction that Prima Gadim most famously makes, that even Rabbi Yehuda still and always assumed that the blind person was obligated in the negative mitzvahs. Okay, so far so clear. Any questions? Again, within the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda, who seems in the Gemara to exempt the blind people from all mitzvahs, one position is, right? Don't try to be too smart. Don't be too cute. Take him as it were. Take him at his word. If he says they're exempt from everything, period. One position, that was one. Then we had the second position so far, which we saw, which was the idea that true from Tosfos, on the Torah level, they're exempt from everything. But come along the rabbis, if we want him to have a Jewish-looking lifestyle, rabbinically he's obligated in everything. And then we have the Prima Gadim, who said even on a Daraisa level, Rabbi Yehuda never meant to say that they were lousy and non-kosher and other things like that. They're always restricted by the mitzvot lo saseh. A final, very famous distinction or nuance comes from the Minchas Chinuch. The Minchas Chinuch mentions this twice, both in Mitzvah Beis and in Mitzvah Chavav. We're yachting now for the Minchas Chinuch Habura. I'm glad you're here. Says the Minchas Chinuch. Oh, okay. That, true, Rabbi Yehuda holds that they're putter from all mitzvahs. Los asei, except, are you going to say that a Jewish blind person has less demanded of him even than a non-Jew? not only perhaps would that be counterintuitive, but we have an idea. There's an idea in Chazal that they sometimes quote, that there's nothing that's prohibited to a non-Jew which is permitted to a Jew. Right? We have higher demands, but we never have, sometimes, for example, abortion, so even though it's prohibited for both of us, they have an even more stringent punishment. Abortion is a capital crime for a non-Jew. Now, ironically enough, it might be better to get the Jewish doctor, but I think all the abortion doctors in Nebuchadnezzar are Jewish. So the overall majority, I've read more than one study about. But that's an interesting idea, that a goy is chayav nisa on an abortion, and even though in almost all cases it is prohibited for a Jew to have an abortion also, it is not a capital crime. That's explicit in Chumash. But that's a difference in punishment severity. But fundamentally, there's no thing that a non-Jew is prohibited in that we're allowed to do. So, says the Minchas Chinuch, this blind person, he's not obligated to light candles, he's not out of the light of the Sheikh Alulov, not rabbinically, not from the Torah, but he is included in the Sheva Mitzvahs B'nai Noach. So, getting back to Yitzchak and Esav, kosher, we have a split in the story. Could Esav have brought Yitzchak non-kosher food, according to the Minchas Chinuch? Yes! A non-Jew is allowed to eat non-kosher. But could he have stolen the food? He could not have, because even a non-Jew is prohibited from being involved in Gezeirah. So that's interesting. I saw just literally about 2 hours ago that Shlomo Zalman Orbach in the Minchas Shlomo and Chelek Aleph Siman Lamed Aleph has a pretty short but a very important tshuva where he discusses in modern times what obligations the parents and or the community have in terms of education in Talmud Torah for kids who are severely deaf. You know, which is a status in halacha, medaber v'ano shomea, or kids who are what we would call colloquially developmentally disabled, retarded, these types of cases. So even though in earlier sources it's clear that in all these cases they are exempt, but now where we have certain technologies, especially when it comes to the deaf, the assumption is very, according to many, is that the reason that the cheresh was exempt is because there was no access. They couldn't communicate with us. We couldn't communicate with them. And we had to assume, at least misafik, that they were deficient intellectually or mentally. But now that we know that they can communicate, whether it's with the computer or in the sign language, so we know everything that's going on. We know what they're absorbing, what they're not absorbing. So contemporary poskim have dealt with these kind of questions. And in that context of that tshuva, in a very kind of, in a parenthesis, literally a parenthetical remark, he says, perhaps when he's not sure, you know, how far he wants to go to push the envelope in terms of obligating, he says maybe they're at least minimally now in modern days obligated in the Sheva Mitzvahs Bnei Noach, perhaps like Rabbi Yehuda says for a blind person. So it's again, in parenthetically, in the context of the modern educational issues, he also has this idea for the Minchas Chinuch, namely that maybe a blind person will be obligated in Sheva Mitzvahs Bnei Noach. And finally, they have the most ambitious, which would be another worthy way of saying, to circumscribe and limit Rabbi Yehuda as much as possible. Again, if you take Rabbi Yehuda literally and at his face value, so he exempts the Summa, the blind person, from everything. And everything we've been doing the last 15 or 20 minutes is bit by bit chipping away. Rabbi Yehuda didn't really mean that, he didn't really mean this, he didn't really mean that. And the most extreme tightening and limiting of Rabbi Yehuda that I'm familiar with comes also from a contemporary source, the Tshuvas Tzitz Eliezer, in Chelet Tes, where he infers from some Rishonim that, according to Rabbi Yehuda, maybe he not only is the blind person prohibited and included in Mitzvot Los Aseh, but perhaps even certain Mitzvot Aseh, She'en Hazman Grama, any Mitzvot Aseh that is connected to a Los Aseh, so maybe they have to make Kiddush, because Zachar V'Shamor, so if according to that approach, they're obligated to all the low sasays of Shabbos, so they're going to be, by definition, sasays, masa and chametz, other such examples. He says even Rabbi Yehuda might even go so far. So if he's right, so then we're obviously bringing it together and closing the gap significantly between Rabbi Yehuda and the other opinion. Just a hakira, some kind of a conceptual framework, just to kind of keep in mind, perhaps where maybe all of these nuances fit in, is suggested, among others, by Moshe Feinstein. Moshe Feinstein is most well-known, obviously, for the Igros Moshe. I don't remember if he wrote this somewhere, I just heard this, and I hope it's accurate if I just heard it, that he was surprised. And he's not the only person, whether it's Gedolim or literary authors. You know, often an author or a scholar considers a certain work their magnum opus, and history judges it completely differently. So apparently Rav Moshe Feinstein felt, so I remember hearing a reading, that his Shiurim, which were written up on Gemara, the Dibros Moshe, was really his magnum opus. And Dibros Moshe, people asked him questions, they gave some answers, did the best he could. And the same with New York Times interview of Rav Moshe Feinstein, and the woman, you can just imagine, you know, the naivete, where she's telling us, how did you become the preeminent halachic decisor of the 20th century? And he says, in such a typically humble way, I don't know, someone came and asked me a question, and they must have liked what I told them, because they told somebody else who came and asked me a question, and they told their friend, and eventually a lot of people started asking me questions. Right? So, that's how he viewed the Ibrahim Moshe. But the Dibros Moshe, he sat on and he harrows on, he hakiras and lumbas. But I said, no one reads the Dibros Moshe. Very, very unpopular, frankly. Now, if you look at it, you'll figure out, I think, why, very quickly. The essays are incredibly long and hard to read. So, there might be a very prosaic reason for it, but be that as it may, at least some of us read it every now and then, in Masechet Kedushin, the Dibros Moshe has this, in Siman Memches, where he has the following hakira about the Suma, again, it's actually Rabbi Yehuda. Is it just a Ptur Ba'alma? The Suma, again, the overlap is, I'm not doing it intentionally, even though I'm conscious of it, but it's almost like in contemporary political correctness. The blind person is just like everyone, he's just like you and me. Just happens to be a Ptur Ba'alma. Torah feels bad for him, he has a disability, so they exempted him. Or perhaps there's something more profound, or is because of that significant physical infirmity and disability, is there some chisaron in his Kedushas Yisrael? And is it that chisaron which is reflected by his exemption in mitzvos? Very, very far-reaching and sharp chakira, the question that Moshe Feinstein asks. And I would suggest, perhaps, that a lot of these nuances and shades that we've seen in Rabbi Yehuda are very much driven by this. The more you see the Summa as fundamentally having the chisaron in Kedushas Yisrael, the more willing you're going to be to bust open the door and see Rabbi Yehuda being very far away. Give me one second, I just want to finish the point. Very far away, and maybe having a complete exemption, like Rabbi Vayner Yerucham says, or barely, maybe Midaraisa there's nothing, but Rabbanan came in just for cosmetic reasons. Midaraisa there's nothing, even according to Tosfos. Now, on the other hand, if you see it as merely a Ptur Ba'alma, but fundamentally there's the same position as well, again, this is not Mukhrach, but then perhaps there's more of a reason to want to limit Rabbi Yehuda as much as possible, because after all, he's just like you and me. He has the same conditions as well. So we want to exempt him. Okay, we don't make things too hard on him. But we're not, you know, to shake a little, that's going to be hard on him. But to avoid non-kosher, maybe that's not as hard. Maybe we'll circumscribe it. Maybe we'll circumscribe it that much. I just have 2 more minutes. I'll take your question at the end, but I don't want to hold other people up. So just to share with you the other Mar Mekomis, the Vav is a whole section that's all Mar Mekomis on the question of a blind person getting an aliyah. This is, basically, I could have given you 20 more sections if I had room on the paper and we had time in the night. Of different 20 different examples in mitzvos, where, whatever the mitzvah is, we then discuss the relevance to a blind person. So I only brought a few of them for you, but the most one that's written on the most is getting an aliyah. The Shulchan Aruch says, straight out, a blind person cannot get an aliyah, because after all, they can't read from the Torah. And we know that fundamentally the person who gets the aliyah is the reader, fundamentally. And there's a halacha that you're not allowed to read the Torah, right? Every bar mitzvah kid is tested on this, hopefully. They're not supposed to read it by pay. You're not supposed to memorize the text. You have to read it out of the scroll. So if a blind person can't read, so how's he supposed to read it out of the scroll? Says the Shulchan Aruch, no aliyah. Comes along the Ramah, based on the Maril, and says, we're mekel. We give blind people an aliyah, and many of the other makaros that you have here are all people, including the Mishnah Berurah, saying, the Bach, I saw it in this community, I saw this Godel where they gave a blind person an aliyah, and the Tzitz Eliezer even quotes makaros where we see in Sephardic communities that they went against the Shulchan Aruch Pesach, and even in Sephardic communities they were giving aliyos to blind people. So we can connect, somebody mentioned to me that they're here tonight because of the shir last week. So the star, who was our star last week? Rav Yaakov Emden here too, and a much less celebrated tshuva, Nebuchadnezzar just about blind people getting aliyos. So the Sheilas Yavitz and Siman Ayin Hey, he's Machmir, he's Mekel on the Pilagish. But we are not letting that blind person get an aliyah. So he says, Shulchan Aruch is right, no aliyah for a Suma. But the Yavitz and the Shulchan Aruch are really outvoted significantly, not only in terms of Makaros, but in terms of practice. I think every shul that I know of gives Nebuch, when there is such a need, will give blind people an aliyah. And finally, just to close out the circle, two things, which I thought, just so you should know, if you want some lumdus, or some interesting lumdus on that debate, this is the end of Vav. The Shraga HaMeir, that's the Shuvah by Shraga Feivish Knibag, who's the head of the Eidah Haredes Bezdin in London, and an obvious match, Halachos Halichos is none other than Rabbi Norman Lamb's Sefer, which is on Lamdash issues as well, which was published many years ago. All, similar, but a little bit different. They both give suggestions, Lamdash suggestions, to explain this debate about whether a blind person can have an Aliyah or not. And the final Os you have here, Ozayin, I mentioned two issues. The first line, which is just relevant, again, I could have picked 10 other mitzvahs, but I figured why not pick the one that's coming up. Namely, discussion of whether blind people are obligated in Neros Chanukah, and specifically whether they can make a bracha on Neros Chanukah concerning the fact that they can't see it. And the final line here that I have for you is the Rav Avadya Yosef, Rabbi Omer, has a discussion about whether a blind person should make a bracha in the morning of Poteach Ivrim. And finally, the last source is in honor of Joey Pollock, the Shuas Ban Hagos of Rav Moshe Sternbach, has a discussion if you have a blind Talmud Chacham, so is there an obligation on us to stand up in front of him when he walks in, since he, Mestama, won't feel honored by it? And he suggests something very much akin to the first Shabbos I was here when I spoke on Friday night, that there's a difference between kavod of the Rav in question and kavod HaTorah, or a more general kavod. And he suggests that even though the blind rabbi doesn't know that you're honoring him, but there's still an idea of kavod HaTorah, that a Talmud Chacham had entered the room, and therefore it would still be obligatory. Okay, it's not for anyone who's coming. Anyone who wants to ask questions, I'm happy to stay. But for anyone who wants to leave, he had a question. The hand up for a second. And if anyone wants to leave, the shiur is officially over. Yes, small. In general, it's a good question. In general, we don't have it. Where it comes up in that same number of dafim and kedushin is also where Mitzvah Seichas Mein Garama is mentioned. And there also, the fact of women being exempted from certain mitzvot, there also it's discussed the overwhelming majority of Rishonim there. Because there is an idea, comes from a Yerushalmi, that Kala Pater in HaDavar, or whatever it is, Unasa Nikra Hedjok. Now you're an idiot. You're not supposed to do things here. Which we all are familiar with, most famously with the context, rain, during sukkahs, right? Draining in sukkahs, and so go after the sukkah, so the folks can say, well, you're an idiot, you're butter. So then, but that's the Yerushalmi. And the Rishonim say, why don't we say that about women shaking the lower? So the Rishonim, the Rishon, the Ramban, they all explain why it's not applicable.
He's butter for me. I mean, if it's not, if he was gone ahead and betrayed, he would have been butter. But Usher says to mom, to go ahead and to give it to him, maybe he saw it.
Oh, on us, maybe. That's on us. Yeah, right. He'll be a dying. Yeah, but that's, again, that's only true. Oh, you're if they are totally exempt, then there will probably be nothing wrong with giving them.
Maybe the putter of also on them.
They shouldn't do it, but if they did, it's okay?
No. If what do you mean by they're putter, but they're also will have to do it. Go ahead.
I didn't see anywhere. Again, other than the opinion that says, Allah says they're obligated. That's one of the opinions. That's right. That was, whoever that is. That's the Prima Gadim. Whoever that is.
If Allah says,
yeah, that's the Prima Gadim. That's the Prima Gadim. I was confused for a second. Prima Gadim says that they're including all those things. But if you don't hold like that Prima Gadim, then I don't think you would say that.